You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Currents issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Hey folks, got big plans for the new year? Maybe you're ready to finally launch a small business, start a blog, or promote your favorite passion project. Well, in this day and age, it doesn't exist if it doesn't have a good-looking professional web presence. Luckily, Squarespace makes it easy to turn your idea into a unique website. Showcase your work, publish content, even sell products and services of all kinds in just a few clicks. You can customize everything from the look and feel to settings and products using beautiful templates created by world-class designers. And there's nothing to install, patch, or upgrade ever. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code KICK to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Again, that's squarespace.com and offer code KICK for 10% off. And now, enjoy the podcast. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis. Welcome to Kick-Ass News. In 1867, humorist Mark Twain published Innocents Abroad, a lighthearted account of his misadventures across Europe and the Holy Land as he experienced new cultures, tried exotic foods, and made more than a few well-meaning faux pas along the way. Innocents Abroad invented the literary genre of the travel memoir, and now 150 years after its publication, a lovable gastronomic goofball for the modern age is carrying on the tradition with a new TV show that blends travel, food, and a good dose of comedy, beckoning viewers to break out of their comfort zones and experience some of the most delightful cultures and delicious dishes the world has to offer. It's called Somebody Feed Phil, and the host is the Emmy Award-winning creator of Everybody Loves Raymond and impassioned foodie Phil Rosenthal. Today, Phil comes on the show to share some of his favorite countries and his most memorable meals and encourage the faint of heart to get adventurous and try something different, whether it's across the ocean or right in your own hometown. He reveals how the idea for Somebody Feed Phil came from a trip he and Ray Romano took to Italy. He recalls some of the cultural roadblocks he encountered when he later produced the Russian version of Everybody Loves Raymond, and talks about the places he likes to call the world's greatest hits. He praises Tel Aviv as a perfect example of food's power to overcome all differences, says Portugal is way more than just Spain's little stepbrother, and recommends a city where you can experience all kinds of international cultures and flavors right here in America. Hint, it's not New York. Plus, where Phil wants to go next, an encounter with the notorious durian fruit, how to eat on camera without looking like a slob, and the greatest news of all, the best meal of your life may only cost you a buck. Coming up with Phil Rosenthal in just a moment. Phil Rosenthal is the Emmy Award-winning creator of the beloved sitcom Everybody Loves Raymond, who's now stepping in front of the camera to share his love of travel and food on his new Netflix series, Somebody Feed Phil. Phil, thanks for coming on the podcast.
I love it. I've stepped in front of the camera, but today you get a break because it's radio.
Well, you know, before I get into this new show, I've been meaning to ask you about something that I heard about Everybody Loves Raymond, which is when you and Ray began the show, he was pretty much a stand-up guy, not an actor.
That's right. He basically
wanted everything on the show to be exactly like his real life so he wouldn't have to pretend. Is that true?
It's true. We had a bit early on where Deborah makes terrible coffee because she makes terrible everything. And he goes, I don't know if I can do this coffee thing. I said, why not? He goes, I don't drink coffee. And I said, okay, but, you know, it's TV, right? We can put anything you want in a cup. And he goes, they're not going to buy it. They're not going to buy it. He can't fake drinking water for coffee, right? Or anything else he wants. So that sounds crazy, and it is. But think about it. It's the definition of the method.
Yeah.
He wants to be 100% real. And that's the job of the actor. So now cut to how many years later, he's in an Oscar-nominated thing. He's getting these roles. You know what he's doing right now? He's in a movie with Robert De Niro and Al Pacino for Martin Scorsese. He was cast in that movie.
Really?
Unbelievable.
What does he play in that? A mobster?
I think an accountant.
Okay.
Or a lawyer. But it's the Jimmy Hoffa story.
Oh, great. Oh,
it's called
cool.
The Irishman.
Oh, wow. That's
comes out
cool.
Probably a year or two because they're like de-aging De Niro and Pacino. That takes a little time.
So did you eventually get him to come out of his comfort zone
Absolutely.
And improvise a little bit?
A few shows in, we forgot that he was said the coffee thing, and then we had another thing with coffee in the show.
Yeah.
And as soon as I saw it on stage when we were rehearsing, I said, whoa, Ray, I'm sorry. Do we put the coffee? We totally forgot. He goes, no, at some point I have to start acting, I guess.
What was the writer's room on Raymond like? Was it the usual deal where pretty much everyone bullshits and makes each other laugh for an hour and then you get 15 minutes of work done?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a lot like that. We would come in the morning, and we would talk, usually in an effort to avoid working. And we were just talking about the stuff of our lives, the stuff of our day. But it turns out that was how we made the show. Invariably around lunchtime, some idiot would say, usually me, hey, wait a minute. We could use that story in the show. Because if you worked for me, your job was to go home, get in a fight with your wife, and come back in and tell me about it.
Yeah.
So that's the – and I had read – years before that, Carl Reiner ran the Dick Van Dyke Show that way.
Yeah.
What happened at your house this week?
Yeah.
And
Larry David on Seinfeld used to do the same thing.
Yeah. Larry David is a walking Curb Your Enthusiasm episode, if you've ever met him.
I've never met him.
The very first time I met Larry David was at a party, and I'm introduced to him. And before he says hello, he says, hey, you think it's okay to throw gum in the fireplace?
I have to say, you know, I've met most of the people I've ever wanted to meet in my life.
Yeah.
But the two people that I always say I would get starstruck would be Larry David and Woody Allen.
Yes.
Those are the two ones that I still would
I
go
can
nuts
see that.
Over.
Yeah, yeah.
and that I relate to in weird
I
ways.
I did meet Woody Allen years ago.
Really?
Right after, I guess, a scandal with Sun Yi.
Okay, yeah.
And he's out here. Where he's not naturally found.
Yeah, yeah.
At a premiere of Sweet and Low Down.
Oh, yeah, the Sean Penn one.
That's right. And I love that movie. And now I'm going to meet one of my idols. Forget how we feel about him today.
Right.
This is one of my absolute comedy heroes, as was Bill Cosby, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He was one of the
can't
best.
Can't listen to him now without having terrible things in my head. But you also can't undo history. So I'm telling you how I felt about him.
Yeah.
Then I'm in awe of meeting Woody Allen. And I meet him, and I introduce my wife to him. And he goes, have you met Sun Yi, the infamous Sun Yi? That's what he said.
That's
I couldn't
how he
believe
introduced
it. Her. And then we were chatting for a bit, and some kid interrupted us to show him a magic trick. And it was like, if you're familiar with his work, remember in Stardust Memories where he can't go anywhere without people like, here, look at me dance. Here, look at this magic trick. Here, look at my, listen to me sing. Here, listen to my. And it actually happened. The kid is doing a magic trick with cards in front of him. And Woody has to stand there and he's looking at me as if I'm the camera, as if I'm the audience, like, can you believe this is my life? This is my life. That was his, what his face was doing. And I was dying because I was in a Woody Allen movie right there. So you're right. You meet the people. They are who they are. That Larry David is Larry David. Think it's okay to throw gum in a fireplace? That's an episode.
Now, I have to ask then, since you mentioned Woody Allen, who are your comedic influence? Because I see a little bit of Woody, maybe even some Marx Brothers. In fact, I think you referenced Duck Soup at some point.
You're right. You're right.
Who were your comedic idols?
All those people you just mentioned, everyone I've just mentioned, everyone who was ever funny on TV when I was growing up. I was born in 1960. So all through the years there, I mean, I'm watching the Jackie Gleason show. I'm watching The Honeymooners, which was already in reruns by the time I was born because that was done in the 50s. Mm-hmm. But that was the biggest influence on me. I wanted to be those guys. I didn't know there was writing and directing and producing. You, when you're a little kid and you watch TV, you just see them.
You just see what's on the screen.
And you think, by the way, no small amount of people still think that's all there is. Those aren't they funny?
People still don't make know up what a producer
those,
does.
They are so funny. They make up all everything they say.
Yeah.
Right? So I just, that was me as a child. I wanted to be, I think, Ed Norton. I wanted to be Art Carney, who was my favorite. And I fell in love with these comic actors like Walter Matthau, and Jackie Gleason, and everyone who was ever on the Johnny Carson show.
Oh, yeah.
Don Rickles, was the all-time Rickles. Favorite guest ever, because no one was funnier than Don Rickles. And you know, even people like Danny Kaye, I thought was so charming and funny and wonderful. And I just liked anyone who went for a laugh.
Yeah, yeah. And you, particularly, you seem to have a very expressive style.
I can't play poker.
Yeah.
Right? You see that fair people enough. Say, oh, we can taste what you're eating. When you read, we know exactly what you're thinking. Yes, that's right, because I'm a terrible liar. There's no acting on the show. If I don't like something, you're going to see that too.
Yeah. You're really good at eating on camera. I think I would be a total failure at that. I would be talking with my mouth open.
I do.
I would be uncomfortable with the silence of the camera watching me eat.
Yes, all
How
that's
do you
taken
eat
out.
Without making a mess.
All that's
that.
Taken
oh,
out.
It's
we
editing.
Have editing.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So, yes, beautiful. I spill on myself. Yes, I got, you know, I do the thing where, you know, it comes away from my mouth and there's a trail of saliva maybe that shouldn't be seen on television. There's all that. I'm a human being. So, there's all kinds
the magic
of things.
Of editing.
Of course. So, we take out. And to be honest, I'm taking out a lot of the stuff that I really am not crazy about. I like almost everything, right? Anyway, I really do. But why bother showing you stuff that I just feel okay about? I want you to travel. So I'm trying to entice you with this food. Why not show you? If you're watching a show, why not get the best out of it? I want a list.
Makes sense.
At the end of each episode, if I'm watching, I want a list of the places to go when I go visit that place.
Not the stuff to
not
avoid.
The okay stuff. Yes, if it's funny that I ate a 1,000-year-old egg in Hong Kong. It's not really a 1,000-year-old egg. It just tastes that way. But
and
I durian. I was a dope, and I put the whole thing in my mouth.
Yeah.
You know, because I thought, what? It's here. It's a food.
Is it like rotten eggs? Does
that's
it stink?
A very, very good guess. Yes, it tastes. That's the first thing you taste.
Yeah,
is really, really, really rotten egg. The second thing you taste is ammonia.
Ooh,
like a powerful punch in the face of ammonia. But what I didn't know then, when I made that show, was that you're supposed to take a sliver of this 1,000-year-old egg, they call it, and put it in the hot pot with a million other ingredients, just like you wouldn't take a bite out of an onion.
Yeah, yeah.
You take
that
a
makes
piece,
sense.
And then it flavors everything. This, but I was stupid. I didn't know. So I eat this and I put the whole thing in my mouth and you hear my brother, who's a producer on the show.
Oh, yeah.
He's laughing his head off because I turned the color of the egg, which was green, by the way.
And you tried durian in the show.
I did.
I've never
I was
had
afraid.
It, but and I've been to Bangkok, but I never tried it. I hear all these things that it just smells horrible. How was it for
that's
you?
That's what I was expecting.
Really?
I thought it's going to be the Limburger cheese of fruit, right? And I was dreading it. And I don't know, maybe I got a really good one, but I thought it tasted pretty good.
Really?
Maybe it's that thing, like, you know how some people have the cilantro thing where it tastes terrible to them? It tastes like soap?
I can't stand cilantro.
Okay, so
it ruins everything for me.
I get it. My son's the same way. Hmm. I am not. I like it.
Yeah?
I don't know. Isn't that funny, though?
Yeah.
There's certain foods that have this trigger. Durian might be the same thing. But I'm telling you, not only did I not have the unpleasant experience, I liked it.
Really?
It was good. You know, they make durian ice cream and stuff. And that, so there must be enough people in the world who like
this thing. Yeah, there has
to
be someone buying it.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. When I went to Bangkok, I think the thing that struck me, and I think you get this too on the show, the fruit.
The fruit is the best in the world.
I never realized the diversity of fruit that exists.
And here we're.
There's crazy stuff like on Mars. It's like an alien fruit everywhere you go there.
And we're in Los Angeles where fruit does very well.
Yeah.
But there. It seems to be like party central for fruit.
Yeah.
Like this is where we go nuts.
Yeah.
And if you have a mango in Thailand, it's not like a mango from Mexico or from wherever we get our mangoes from in the world here. Because when you bite into a mango here, as delicious as it is, and it's like the king of fruits to me, there's a certain fibrousness to it. You get the strings caught in your teeth a little
definitely.
Bit.
Yeah.
When you have a mango in Thailand, you have all that flavor, plus maybe a little more flavor in this almost creamy, fiber.
I was gonna say, it's almost like sorbet.
Literally melts in your mouth. You can't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah, the fruit over there, it's like something out of Dr. Seuss. I saw things that I never would have imagined in my wildest dreams.
And the durian itself, the outside of a durian, is the size of a giant football with spikes on it, right?
Wow.
It's a crazy looking thing.
Yeah.
It says, don't eat me.
Well, you know, I understand that the origins of somebody feed Phil goes all the way back to Everybody Loves Raymond,
right? That's right. That's right. Because we did a show in I asked Raymond if he had ever been in Europe, and he said no. And I said, why not? And he said, I'm not really interested in other cultures. And so I knew we had to do that show because I love to travel. And so we did that show where we sent him to Italy, where his family's from. We sent him as him, and we sent him back as me.
Yeah.
Someone excited. Yeah. And what I saw happen to the character that I wrote, him getting woke in Italy over a slice of pizza – I saw happen to the person. I saw it happen in real life. And that turned me on to wanting to do this, wanting to turn other people on to what I love about the world, about travel and how it's the most mind-expanding thing that we can do in life.
Yeah, that's such an American thing to say. I'm not really into experiencing other cultures.
Yes, but don't you think that the world might be a little bit nicer?
Absolutely.
If we just experienced a little bit of someone else's experience?
Yeah.
Maybe a tiny bit of understanding? Need. Have we tried that? What's the Elvis Costello song? What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm here to show you.
Yeah, that's terrific. So with this new show, then you're trying to inspire that same kind of new experience for people who, like Ray, maybe were a little bit reticent and not crazy about getting outside their comfort zone and trying something different, huh?
Just
to open your mind a little.
I'm not comfortable going outside my comfort zone.
Oh, you're not?
No.
My
pitch for the show was, I'm exactly like Anthony Bourdain if he was afraid of everything. I don't want to go to the jungles of Borneo, get nails pounded in my chest but with a tattoo from the tribesmen. I'm not doing that. I'm not going to places where you could get shot. I'm not going to places where you know, your dune buggy tips over, right? He's an adventurer, and he's the best in the world at it. And everyone who works in this genre, which I'm new at, owes a debt of gratitude to Anthony Bourdain because he pioneered this thing. But he is now a journalist. A fearless flyer, you know, he does it. I am the opposite. I'm the guy sitting on the couch looking at him and going, he's amazing. I'm never doing that.
So you're probably not going to Libya anytime soon. Like
I doubt it.
Okay.
And I mean, never say never. Maybe I'll evolve like he evolved from a food guy to a true journalist. I don't know what's ahead, but I do know that I feel like I represent the average viewer, especially the average American. Two-thirds of us in America don't even have a passport.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, that's a crime.
So I'm here to say, you're missing out.
Yeah.
You're missing out. It's not
– really
you think you're shutting out the world and you're safe. No. You're actually you're not living your full life. You're not being as happy as you could be. You don't know what you're missing. So I'm here to show you, and I'm starting with the most accessible places. I'm starting with what I think are Earth's greatest hits so to get my fellow couchmates off the couch to travel. Now, I also understand we all can't afford to travel, depending on where we are in life, right? We might be kids and we can't don't have the money. We might be older and are still saving up and just trying to get by. But at least once per six episodes, if I'm lucky enough to continue, I'm going to do an American city.
Right.
Because you can travel in your own country. I think you can travel.
New Orleans this time.
Yes, you can travel in your own town.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is there's an ethnic food restaurant in your town that you never tried because what do I know? I'm not really interested in other cultures. I'm afraid of what's – maybe I won't like it. So here's what I want you to do. Go on your phone. Google the Peruvian restaurant. Go on Yelp. Google that Peruvian restaurant or the Chinese place or the Thai place or whatever thing that you're not used to eating. Look at the menu online. Yes, this costs nothing, and you can go and check it out. And you're going to see something on that menu that you could handle. Maybe
travel
like.
In your backyard.
And once you do that, the door is open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you go to New Orleans for your local visit this time around. New Orleans is like visiting another country.
It sure is.
If you want to experience a whole lot of other cultures, French, Spanish, Caribbean influences,
African,
I mean, that's the
place
to go in America, really.
You got it, and it's a world heritage site of jazz, right? I mean, it's our culture.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not interested in other cultures, at least explore ours. But you're going to go there. It's the most European of American cities. It's got real history where you see buildings that are 200, maybe 300 years old, right?
Yeah.
And you won't have better food.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, that's like.
Yeah.
And it's not good for you.
Oh, no.
And you so can, don't think it's a health food city. In fact, their motto should be New Orleans.
There.
We're trying to kill you.
That, you know, it's funny. I always think to myself, I would love to live in New Orleans, but I think to myself, I would be dead by now if if I actually made my home in New Orleans, because you can drink 24 hours, you can smoke everywhere, you can eat the most delicious food that's horribly bad for you.
I actually think that the only way to beat New Orleans in that way is to move there, because see, if we go to visit, if you and I went for the weekend or for a week, we try to get in all the greatest hits of New Orleans.
Yeah.
All the fattening, drinking stuff to do, right?
Yeah.
But if you lived there, you would gauge yourself because you can't do that every day.
Okay.
You see, you would say, I don't want that big, heavy thing today. There is a salad place over here.
Yeah.
Now, you don't go there.
I just think I would turn into this insane hedonist, though, if I lived there.
You would.
I don't know if I have your self-control.
But by the way, you can do that here.
Yeah.
You can do that in L.A. We're certainly enough junk food. But the thing is that we live here, and so since we want to keep living, we don't do that kind of thing every day.
Yeah.
Same as if you live in New Orleans.
Well, where did your love of food come from? Did you come from a big foodie family growing up?
I came from the opposite.
Yeah.
I came from, and I've talked to other food people, even great chefs, who told me that they didn't grow up with great food in the house. Even people like Alice Waters, who said it wasn't until they had a trip to Europe that they had this epiphany.
Okay.
And you know, when certain things hit you at a certain age, when you're coming of age, let's say, and certain music's on the radio, that's your music for life.
Yeah.
So my music for life is food, because when I got out of my folks' house, I was exposed to flavors that I never had, including something like garlic. I never had garlic until I went to college.
You're kidding me.
I'm not. We didn't have it in the house.
What would you eat growing up? I mean, you came from a New York Jewish family.
Yes.
So what, matzo ball soup?
Yeah, there was that. That was good.
Kreplach. I don't know.
Nope, never had that. Nope, there were things I never had. And we had, both my parents worked. We didn't have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And so the cuisine was, I would say, inexpensive.
Yeah.
and so it wasn't the best cut of meat. And then wasn't really paid attention to with the kind of care that a restaurant puts into cooking a steak.
Mm-hmm.
It was a tough, dry piece of meat, gray, and it hurt to chew. I remember as a child that this felt like I had done something wrong. Why? I guess I have to eat this. I wasn't allowed to get up from the table until I swallowed. And I would remember storing it in my cheeks and pretending that I finished and going to
a wood jug.
Yes, bathroom and spitting it out. Yes.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more with Phil Rosenthal when we come back in just a minute. Hey, folks. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for the last-minute deal or need the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. I have the SeatGeek app near the top of the homepage on my phone because it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I instantly find tickets. I love going to concerts, comedy, and Broadway shows, so just in the past month, I've used SeatGeek to buy tickets for John Mulaney's concert and Hamilton the Musical. Now, folks, you probably know how impossible it is to get seats to Hamilton, but SeatGeek hooked me right up with no hassle. I could have literally wasted hours going on different sites and comparing prices from ticket brokers, meeting some guy on a street corner wondering if the tickets are legit, but instead, SeatGeek made it simple for me to get the best deal on the best seats for the hottest show in town in less than 5 minutes. It's designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek even grades every ticket price based on value to help you get the most bang for your buck. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code KICK today. That's promo code KICK for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. And now, back to the show. Now, your parents are actually on this show. Every episode,
yes.
You talk to them via Skype. They almost have a certain Woody Allen movie-like quality to them.
People tell me that they like the show. They love my parents.
Your parents.
And I'm like, why do I bother traveling? Then why don't I just sit in the kitchen with them? That's the show. They love my parents. I think they are hilarious, yes. They're endearing. They're sweet. And I think they remind you of your parents in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It's a very relatable thing. And that's something that I learned doing Raymond is the key to everything.
Yeah.
You get very specific, and therein lies the universality.
Yeah, because Raymond, it's all about the fights that couples have,
yes.
which everyone relates to, or
right.
something with the in-laws,
right.
or, you know, jealousy between brothers and
yes.
sibling rivalries. That gets to what you did after Raymond, which is an interesting kind of tie-in between travel and Raymond.
Yeah.
You started translating Everybody Loves Raymond to different countries. You
That's
yourself
right.
would go there and basically recreate the whole show
yeah.
just for a different culture. Like you did it in Israel, you did it in Russia, which was the subject of a documentary, in fact.
Yes.
How many countries did you do that in?
Just two or three
really?
I went to. I mean,
okay.
they've gone on and done it without me. I didn't make that my mission in life, but I did.
Yeah.
I was asked by the Russians to come over and turn the sitcom into Everybody Loves Kostya. And that became a documentary because I brought a camera crew to film.
Yeah.
I'd heard that it was going to be a wild experience. And so we brought a camera crew. And that movie, you can actually, they started running it on Netflix now. It's called Exporting Raymond.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I hope you see that. That was actually the transition for me to being in front of the camera because I'm the guy in the documentary who's the idiot thinking he's an expert in something, and he goes to a land where nobody cares.
Now, what was the biggest cultural hurdle that you encountered trying to translate Everybody Loves Raymond to Russia or Israel?
I would say in Russia, they had this idea that men are strong and men rule the house. So your whole notion of Raymond being submissive to the women in his life. So the entire premise of the show of a guy caught between his mother and his wife.
Yeah.
It doesn't
that.
Work. They told me it wouldn't work.
So then how did you do it?
I didn't listen to them.
How did you? You just didn't. Oh, you just went
I
with
just
it.
Okay. felt like this is a bit maybe of posturing. That it's a bit. It's how we, you would like to see yourselves, men, as the stronger one. But I just didn't sound real to me. It sounded like it was not real. And if you went for the real thing, which is everyone answers to some when Putin comes home, he says, "I am king of the world," you know, and his wife says, "Take off those shoes, you've been in the mud. Take them off." And he says, "Yes, dear." That's what I think.
But you know what he did?
That's
But you know what he did? He exiled his wife to a monastery like czars used to do.
Did he?
Yeah. You don't divorce your wife. You go and send her to a monastery. I heard that he literally did that.
What does he have now?
He supposedly has a mistress who I think she was an Olympian or something like that.
I promise whoever he's with, he answers to her. I'm telling you. I understand cultural differences. Yeah. I do, but I also understand, after being an expert in it for a long time, what marriage is like.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care if it's a gay marriage, a lesbian marriage. I don't care what it is. Okay, you answer to the person who that you live with. That's okay. Just how it is. And
even if he's former KGB,
I don't care.
Okay. All right.
He's not letting you see it.
You'd be a braver wife than I would be.
I would. But I also think that there's a certain amount of look, we saw Trump. He's walking down the thing with the wife, and the wife swats his hand away.
Yeah.
Wow. That's the president of the United States.
Yeah.
Wow.
Might be the most relatable he's ever been, I think.
Well,
right there.
Come on. I'm telling you, that's nothing. That's not nothing. That's that says a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, the way I found out that I really was onto something was I finally got into a Russian family's house for dinner.
Oh, yeah?
And we show that scene. And guess what? They're exactly like us. Exactly the same. We're all the same. Husbands, wives, that. You know, there may be a little bit more of woman respects the man because he's the man. A little bit.
Yeah.
Not that much.
You know, we are pretty much all alike. And you don't realize that till you travel.
Yes. It's a very sweet thing to realize.
Oh, yeah.
I think our differences are to be celebrated.
Yeah.
And our similarities are very, very comforting. That everyone in Vietnam loves their children. Everyone wants to be happy.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to live in peace. They don't like war.
Yeah.
Nobody does unless there's something really wrong with them.
Mm-hmm.
We want to go about our lives and eat good food and breathe clean air and have clean drinking water. Who doesn't want that? Right?
Yeah. Yeah, and you go to Israel, and I think that's one of the big takeaways, is that everyone doesn't just live and breathe fear and war in Israel. You know, in fact, in the marketplace, you know, you see Jews and Muslims getting along just fine. The love of food and commerce trumps everything else, I guess.
The problem is, and it's nobody's fault. It's just, it's news when people are not getting along.
Yeah.
Nobody says breaking news, Jews and Arabs happy together.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But I found it was very easy for me to find Jews and Arabs getting along very, very well.
Yeah.
And it was lovely to see and completely eye-opening because we're inundated with war in the Middle East.
Yeah.
Fighting in the Middle East. This one hates that one, and that's all there is there.
Speaking of Israel, I have to say that you do say something in this show that I completely relate to because I've said it myself whenever people ask me, how was Israel? Was it beautiful? Did you love it? Because in their minds, I think most people think it's just all ancient in Israel. But I mean, parts of Israel are kind of ugly. I mean, it's like a lot of apartment buildings from the 60s and 70s seen better days.
Because it was built in a hurry.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Now, it's naturally beautiful. It has natural beauty, like on the ocean stuff. And then as you go north in the more rural sections, it's absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. And it is a miracle that it was built out of the desert from nothing. And it's the fact that they have anything is a miracle.
Yeah.
Especially with everyone around them, you know, ostensibly not wanting them to exist.
Yeah.
Right? However, within the country, there's beautiful stuff going on. It's a beautiful place to visit. And the food, I think, is the world cuisine number one right now. Number one cuisine in the world.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's
I
everywhere
heard you say
I've
that.
Been.
That surprised me.
You can go anywhere on earth now and get a falafel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
get
I guess
some
so.
Hummus. Get
okay.
some. I mean, it is the number one restaurant in New Orleans. In New Orleans is an Israeli restaurant.
I would not have imagined that.
Yep. Me neither.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
Everyone keeps talking about Vietnam. And
right.
you go to Vietnam and this. I know that when I had Anthony Bourdain on, he said that's the place to go. I have friends who've been there on business and for fun, and they all say you've got to go to Vietnam. What is it about Vietnam that's so special?
Well, when Bourdain is going, right, and the parts he shows you, I'm like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think, he's eating his tastes are very, very different from me.
Mm-hmm.
And the only Vietnam that I know, having grown up in the 60s and 70s, is the Vietnam War.
Right.
Not just from the news, but from all the movies I grew up with.
Yeah.
So why would I think anything else? That's my frame of reference. But at the same time, people now are saying favorite place they've ever been. So that's what's in my head as we land in Vietnam. And then I see Saigon is a beautiful, modern city with big skyscrapers and, some old world charm. There's still the French influence from when they were there. The food is unbelievable. And then you get out into the country, it's gorgeous. And it's a very young country.
Mm-hmm.
60% of the population, I think, is under 30.
Oh, wow.
And so they don't even have the memory of the war. And
so everything's fresh there.
You see the show. Look how friendly and open and beautiful and smiling and loving they mm-hmm. are. Look at the kids. I mean, my heart was melting at these people. And I just fell in love. I fell in love. And I can't wait to go back. And I only saw a small part of it. It's a bigger country than we think.
Is it? How big is it?
I don't know
if I had any reference.
Yeah, you got to ask an expert. But I do know that the show couldn't afford to do the North and the South. And episode is too far.
Okay.
Right?
No kidding.
So that's another episode. I have to go back to Hanoi. I have to go back to the middle part of the country, which they say is actually the culinary capital. But I went to Saigon and I went south to a place called Vung Tau. I taught English to a little class of kids. That was adorable. And I had some amazing food there too, some of the best seafood I've ever had. It's great. It's really great and really fun and totally comfortable.
Okay,
You think you're going to live in a hut somewhere out in the middle of a rice paddy?
Yeah,
no, there's hotels that are nice.
Yeah.
They're hotels. Look. You're talking to a guy who doesn't want to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I'm very, very old now, and I like a bed in a hotel. That's not a lot to ask for most people.
So
and I'm only going to these places where I think you would be comfortable.
Yeah. And you said that you kind of try to hit the world's best of, the top 10.
World's greatest hits.
Greatest hits.
You
that's right. And you do that with this show, but you also visit Lisbon. Now, I imagine that most people, they could probably go to a dozen different countries in Europe before they would give Portugal a second thought.
Yeah.
And yet, from everything I see, the food, the port, it looks like a fairy tale, everything about it, I think I would have an amazing time there. Does
it
kind of get overshadowed by Spain? Or
it does.
Why aren't more people interested in Portugal?
No, it's like they treat it like the New Jersey of Spain.
Yes.
It's not. It's first tier, top tier. First class city.
Yeah.
Lisbon.
Yeah. It's
and
beautiful.
I didn't even see the rest of Portugal. I went a little bit north to Sintra, which is gorgeous with those fairy tale castles
you
mentioned and the woods and the parks in the woods. And I mean, I absolutely fell in love with Lisbon. It was so unexpected. First of all, you get there and it looks like San Francisco right away.
Yeah. That was interesting.
Right away. You're reminded of San Francisco. It's on the bay. It's got hills. It's got trolleys. Just like San Francisco, and a bridge across the bay that looks a lot like the Golden Gate Bridge. But then it's got piazzas like Italy, and it's got cafes like Paris, and it's got pastries that are just as good as Paris, and it's got seafood because it's on the water that's unbelievable, and it's a very walkable, navigatable city, and it's beautifully designed. Beautiful. You can't ask for a better vacation than
Now, so you go there, you go to New Orleans, Mexico City, Bangkok,
Mexico
Vietnam,
City,
Tel Aviv.
Very close to us.
Yeah.
And we think,
accessible.
Mexico, because we hear things. Oh, Mexico, shouldn't go to Mexico. Go to Mexico because it's phenomenal. And let's say you like us being in Southern California. We get a lot of Mexican food.
Yeah.
There's a big Mexican influence. But it's still, even though it's a few hours away, it's still not like going to the source of tacos. Right? of tortillas themselves, of beautiful food. Modern. I saw modern buildings in Mexico City that are more modern than anything we have here.
Mm-hmm.
I saw so many beautiful parks, beautiful people, beautiful restaurants, state-of-the-art and old world, gorgeous hotels, super comfortable, super safe, really nice. Mm-hmm. I was told, you better get a bodyguard if you go to Mexico City. I'm like, really? Yeah. I get there. I got a bodyguard because I do what I'm told. And the first thing the bodyguard said to me is, you don't need a bodyguard. I said, no. He goes, you see the people walking? I said, yes. Do they have bodyguards?
Yeah.
No.
Well, yeah, everyone's so freaked out about the drug cartels, but I never hear of anything going on in Mexico City. Whenever these crazy things happen or these assassinations, people
here's where you might
thrown
get into
in a mass
trouble.
Grave. I never hear of that happening in the capital there.
Here's where you might get into trouble.
Yeah.
A rough neighborhood.
Okay.
Same as you have in L.A.
Right.
Or any other major city.
Yeah.
At 2
Basic
in the morning.
Common sense. Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
So am
Fair
I
enough.
Doing that? No, I'm not doing it here. I live in a very straight, safe street in Los Angeles, and I don't go out alone at 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
Right?
So what's the best thing that you had in each of these 6 places you went for this show?
Oh, we're going to go one by one?
Well,
or the very best single bite of food.
Okay, sure. Let's trim it down because we'd be here all day probably.
You're right. Every place has something to offer. Every place has that thing where you eat it in the show and then you turn to your crew and say, let's come back here when we're not filming.
Oh, interesting.
Right? So yeah. We have that,
okay,
at least once per show.
Uh-huh.
In Thailand, there's a bowl of soup called khao soi. Khao soi is a coconut curry-based soup with fresh noodles, like pasta, like fresh-made pasta, at the bottom of this bowl. And it's a coconut curry soup that has pickled mustard greens put in it. And, you know, it gives it a certain tang. And then chili peppers, which gives it heat. And then there's all kinds of other herbs and onions and shallots and very, very well-balanced thing. And then giant pieces of whatever meat you want. So chicken would have a whole drumstick and a thigh in there. Beef would be fresh, grass-fed, organic, fresh, delicious beef. Then on top are crispy noodles. So it's got everything going.
Oh, God.
Everything. I'm describing a perfectly balanced bowl
of
food.
Sounds like there's a lot going on in that bowl
You'll
of soup.
You'll see it in the show. This bowl comes. It could easily feed 3 people.
Oh, this was that giant
bowl.
Giant
bowl.
That's right.
I'm telling you.
It's like a cauldron.
It's one of the most delicious things I ever ate. It's a dollar. A dollar. If you want the chicken beef combo, $1.50. Because he's running a deal.
Well, see, now that's something that people need to know about. Yeah, you have to spend for the ticket to get there, and you have to spend on a hotel, but you save on food and a lot of the other experiences.
You know that saying, the best things in life are free?
Mm-hmm.
I want to amend that. Or a dollar.
A dollar. How about here in your hometown? Do you have any favorite restaurants
Absolutely.
In L.A.?
Oh, yeah.
Aside from your own, because I think you've invested in a lot of restaurants yourself.
There's a reason for that.
Yeah? Like to lose money?
I'm not very bright. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The other reason is I love them so much because I believe that a great restaurant is like traveling for the day, right? For the evening.
Yeah.
A great restaurant transports you.
That's true.
Especially if the food is delicious.
Yeah. A little mini vacation.
It is a little mini vacation. So I actually put my money where my mouth is. And I support the arts. I support the arts anyway. You know, the arts that we think of as the arts.
Right.
But
also
why is your sense
arts.
Of taste less than your sense of sight or sound, right?
That's so true.
So I support these great artists called chefs, and it makes my town better. I think, you know, selfishly, if I love a chef and what they do, I want to have a place where I can go eat that food.
And some of these are big hits, the ones that you've supported, because I know that République is one of them.
True.
Moza.
I'm in over 20 restaurants. And usually they do okay. But you know why? Because I'm not in it to make money.
Yeah.
Don't you know?
Do
that's a life lesson, right? I'm doing what I love. I'm only betting on the chef. I don't care about the trendiness of it or...
Yeah, and that's one
of
the hardest things in L.A., I think, is the trendy factor that you have to deal with.
So I have a business manager. So let's say I like the food, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yes, I want to support this.
Yeah.
My business manager then makes the financial decision based on if it looks okay on paper.
Okay.
Which I could fall asleep at the first line of numbers. I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm only interested. So I'm the heart and he's the head.
Yeah. Okay,
and I tell the chefs, listen, I might
Seems
be in.
Be working.
I might love you. I might love your food. But if the head says no, I can't do it. He protects me from myself or I do everything.
How about if a chef wants you to invest and you're not really crazy about the restaurant, do you use your accountant to play bad cop?
Oh, that's very good.
I'd love to, but my accountant
that's very doesn't
good. Like what he sees in the books here.
That's very good. I should do that.
Yeah.
No, I'm pretty honest.
Yeah.
I say, you know, I feel like, you know, maybe it needs this, this, and this, if they're asking me.
Yeah.
Sometimes they just want a yes or a no, and they don't care what you think.
Yeah.
That's true, too. But I don't stay, I don't kind of intrude on the artist's vision. I'm like the studio.
Yeah,
that I would want to work for if I'm the writer for that studio.
Yeah,
once I'm hired, let me do my job.
Yeah,
so that's how I am with the chefs.
Before we go, what is at the top of your list right now as far as the next place you want to go, whether it's for the show or just for fun?
Okay, so I've never been to Shanghai.
Okay,
or Taiwan. I've never been there.
Oh,
hey,
yeah.
Here, these are amazing places to go.
And
there are
food.
Places that I've never been to. Marrakesh.
Oh God, you got to go there.
You've been there.
Yeah. Morocco's one of my top five easily, maybe close to number one.
No kidding. The photos that you see.
Yeah.
You just love the way it looks.
Mm-hmm.
You can't wait to go there. And I'm sure the food is awesome. It had Moroccan food. There was a place in L.A. that – was it Dar Maghreb? Was that a Moroccan restaurant?
Where was it?
It was on Sunset, and it looked like you were going into a – kind of a Moroccan palace. It was awesome.
Yeah.
There was even a belly dancer with
the
a snake.
Yes. And everything. Oh, yeah.
And you sit on the pillows and you eat them. What a great, you know, you're like in Lawrence of Arabia or something. It just feels like another time and place.
And it's so accessible and it's not weird. I think for Americans, it's a great introduction to the Middle East, North Africa region because it is completely safe and it's beautiful. It's actually clean. Marrakesh is all pink. It's just beautiful,
man.
And the history there, and
so people think I've traveled everywhere. I really haven't. I mean, I've traveled. I go to Italy every chance I get because I love Italy.
Yeah,
Italy wins for me.
Yeah,
everywhere you look is gorgeous. The food's unbelievable. It's like my favorite cuisine so far, and everyone's hugging and kissing.
Yeah, and there's always something new in Italy.
Yes,
you know, I feel like you have about a dozen cities that could easily be the equivalent of a Paris or a London or something like that. But they're all—it's just spread out all over the country. You would need several months to really do Italy.
It's all I can do to not go to Italy every season of the show. You know, I want to go. Well, we didn't do Rome yet. We didn't do the Amalfi Coast yet, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of Italy to do.
It's a lot of the world to do.
Yes, there's a lot of it's a big world, I say. Somebody's got to eat it.
Yeah. Well, this has been so much fun. I enjoyed the show. Again, it's called Somebody Feed Phil. It's now available on Netflix. Phil Rosenthal, thanks so much for joining me.
Loved it. Thank you.
Thanks again to Phil Rosenthal for coming on the podcast. Watch all 6 episodes of Somebody Feed Phil on Netflix and follow him on Twitter at Phil Rosenthal. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on iTunes and leave us a review. You can follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at Kick-Ass News Pod. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, and ideas at comments@kickassnews.com. I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.